that they have given a bit of time for other members to join us. There's still one or two that are supposed to join us, and normally we ensure that that happens. Normally we ensure that those members come here. The meeting is a breaking meeting by the office of the Auditor General of the Republic of South Africa to the Portfolio Committee of Public Works. We also have minutes that we should consider as Portfolio Committee. Because we're still waiting for one or two members to join us, we'll then deal with the minutes later. We have a list of apologies which the secretary to the committee will be taking us through. We want to immediately clarify that earlier on we thought the department would also be with us today, but when we had to engage with them, we agreed that we will meet the department later, not today. So today it is only the Auditor General's office and the Portfolio Committee members. The minister has ensured that his office is represented, and you can see the two gentlemen up here. We wanted to indicate that we have been sorry that we have members that are not here, not because they didn't prioritize, but it's the fact that we are human beings. Sometimes our bodies want an attention by those that are able to fix us when we're not very strong. One honorable member, Dr. Mandoba, has been in hospital for some 2 days now. So we are sending our wishes for a quick recovery. We want her to join us soon. A meeting without Dr. Mandoba, it's really not a warm meeting. We hope that should be the minute. We will then move to the apologies and allow our secretary to do the rest of the apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to all of the members, our colleagues from the Office of the AG, as well as our colleagues in the department, and definitely our colleagues here. Welcome back in there. Getting to the apologies, the Chairperson has alluded to Honorable Mandoba is currently hospitalized, and why she's not able to join us today. The other apology is that of Honorable Matele, she also appealed. Honorable Kutande is also attending another Portfolio Committee meeting, that's why he won't be available today. Honorable Kukole is overseas on public business. Lastly, Honorable Pig has to attend the version method, that's why he's not able to join us today. Thank you very much, Chair.
So I take it that we note and accept those apologies. Thank you very much. We will then move straight, because the minutes will attend to them later once other members have joined us. We will then move straight to the presentation by the Office of the Auditor General. But we always allow who speak up. Because I want the honourable members to introduce themselves, and then the Office of the Auditor General will be moving the mic to the members, or maybe take it there and move it. We'll start by introduction, then the honourable members will go first. My name is Humphrey Mmemezu, the Chair of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Freddy Adams.
Morning. My name is Manu Kumatihen. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Timmy Joe.
Good morning. My name is Dennis Ryder, member of the Commission.
Thank you very much. I'm advised the Office of the Auditor General are well equipped. The technology is there. Can we hand over to them, or they will start by introduction? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It's Lerato Poe, stakeholder liaison manager.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Benjamin Sanatai.
If there's a problem there, the technology use it properly.
Good morning, my name is Jacqueline van der Berg, manager from the AP office.
Morning.
Okay, let's agree. It is not as strong as we wanted, but the radio manages very well. So if we can learn from the radio, that is not very strong. We are picking it up. So try to be audible. Otherwise, the whole exercise is not helpful.
My name is Dave Motara. I'm the senior manager from the Auditor General.
Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. My name is Dave Motara. I'm the third senior manager of the Auditor
General. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable members. My name is Nora Tikulikela. I'm the corporate executive from the Office of the Auditor General.
Thank you very much. There are other ladies in the corner there. They're part of the AG or the Balatarita. Okay, we have the gentleman from the Minister's Office. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable members, my name is Tan Lo. My name is Obaba from the Ministry of Public Works.
Good morning. My name is
Tan Lo.
I'm the Minister of
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, honorable guests. My name is Nkoma Shaba from the Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
Okay, there's a punishment. Take it to the corner there. Where faith is seated, let's hear who faith is and who is sitting next to them.
Thank you, Chairperson.
You are a
communicator,
so you should teach us how to communicate.
My name is Faith Ndeze from Parliamentary Communication Services.
Yeah.
My name is Mena Ashitiva from PNG.
Members, they didn't hear properly. Your organization.
My name is Mena from Parliamentary Monetary Group.
Okay, that's better. Thank you very much. We're heading over to the Office of the Auditor General to present to the members of Parliament responsible for public works. We have welcomed you and appreciated the work you're doing in South Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'll be taking us through the presentation on the Audit Office.
portfolio. I apologize if this mic seems to be quiet to me. As soon as you can't hear me, you let me know. Yes, we start off with our reputational promise, which talks to our constitutional mandate, and our goal is to build public confidence in the public sector, which we do through our work, which is politics. And through this, we hope to strengthen the country, our country's democracy. In this reporting process, we are here to assist the portfolio committee in performing its oversight role by reflecting on the audit work performed and the audit outcomes for the entities within the portfolio. If we move on to our focus areas, our annual audit examines three areas. The first is the audit of the financial statements. The second is the audit of the performance information. And the third is the audit of the compliance with key legislation. And we express the following different audit opinions, ranked from the best audit outcome to the worst audit outcome. We start off on the far left with the green color, which is the best audit outcome, which is what we call the clean audit, unqualified audit outcome on financial statements, as well as no key material findings on any of the other areas either. Then the next one is the yellow one, which is no qualification on financial statements. However, there are material findings either with respect to performance information or compliance with key legislation, or both of them. Then the next one is the purple one, which deals with qualified opinion. This is where there is material errors in the financial statements. However, the material errors are limited to certain areas within the financial statements. Then the pink one is the adverse opinion. Once again, there's material errors in the financial statements. However, these material errors are pervasive throughout the financial statement. And finally, the red outcome, which is the disclaimed audit outcome, where, in fact, we don't issue an audit opinion due to material limitations on our work, which are pervasive throughout the financial statements. On all the qualified audit outcomes, which is the purple, yellow, and red, there are also material findings with respect to performance information as well as compliance with legislation. Then the final introductory paragraph gives a legend of the colors used throughout the rest of the presentation, which is split between the overall audit outcomes, which I just discussed, and the acronyms used for different audits within the public works portfolio. You will note a new acronym there for the first time this year, which is ASA, Agreement of South Africa, which was audited for the first time in this current year. Okay. Then on the 17-18 audit outcome, we start by looking at what we call the accountability wheel, and or the plan, do, check, act cycle. This is what we've used to assist the department, or sorry, to assist the committee in assessing what are the key areas that need to be addressed. And we look at it as a wheel, with each of the plan, do, check, act as a key spoke or component of the wheel. And if all the spokes of the wheel are functioning optimally, then we will be able to move forward. However, if any of the spokes are not functioning optimally, the wheel will not be able to operate as intended. We start off with plan, which looks to defining targets, and the responsibility for this area rests with the highest levels, which is the executive authority and the accounting officer or the accounting authority. Then we move on to the do section. The do part of the cycle is where the majority of the stuff happens. This is where implementation and the basics happen, implementation on a daily basis throughout the year. This is the responsibility of the officials under the supervision of senior manager, as well as the accounting officer. Once the doing is complete, that's when the checking comes in. Checking is done by the assurance providers, which is internal audit and the risk and governance units within the department and entities, which are the internal assurance providers, and then also the external assurance providers, which are the audit committees, as well as ourselves as Audit General of South Africa. Once the findings from the assurance providers come in, it's back to the accounting officer of the department to act and implement consequences where there were weaknesses identified by the assurance providers. And once we get through the plan, do, check, act cycle, if everything happens as is, we should see an improvement in audit outcomes. However, if it doesn't happen as intended, we will see the election or negative audit outcomes. And once we get the proper audit outcomes, we will see the desired impact, which is a better life for all citizens. On the next slide, we look at the Plan Do Check Act cycle with respect to the public works portfolio. As you can see, there is very little improvement. On the right-hand side, we'll be showing the arrows. A green arrow would have indicated a significant improvement compared to the prior year. But as you can see, there's mostly yellow arrows with a few red arrows. There's very little improvement. And if you look at the colors of the status, you will note that where it's yellow, that means there is some concern, and where it's red, there is significant intervention required. So we can see here that the worst part of the cycle is currently sitting with the do, which is the implementation. And you see as we go throughout the rest of the presentation that implementation has been the key weakness identified in this portfolio. On the next slide, we look at a snapshot of the portfolio as a whole. On the first line, we're looking at the overall, for the whole portfolio, there is only one audit that was a clean audit, which is the best audit outcome, which is the same as last year. And this is one of the smaller entities within the portfolio, being the Council for the Built Environment. The next line, we're looking at the three audit areas, which is the financial statements. Here in the current year, we had four audits which had unqualified audit outcomes compared to three in the last year. The additional unqualified audit outcome was the new audit that came in Lehman Africa. So none of the audits that were qualified previously improved to unqualified in the current year. On performance information and compliance with legislation, there's been no improvement from last year to this year. It's still the same. One audit has quality performance reports, and two audits have no finding of compliance with legislation. And our key focus area is irregular expenditure, where there was some improvement noted, but it's still very concerning is the amount of irregular expenditure incurred, 210 million rand incurred in the current year, which is an improvement from 277 million incurred in the prior period. On the next slide, we show a graphic representation of the outcome for the portfolio over 4 years. As you can see, over the 4 years, there has been some improvement, with the CBE obtaining a clean audit for the first time last year and maintaining it in the current year. PNCE is the only other one that shifted during the period. It went from qualified 4 years ago to adverse, which is a regression in the prior period, and it improved slightly to a qualification in the current period. All the other audits have stagnated over the 4 year period. Then we look at those two audits that are sitting with negative audit outcomes, which is the PMTE as well as the IDT. We focus a bit more on those qualification areas or those areas that led to the qualification with a comparison to the qualification areas of the prior period. On the left hand side column, we're looking at the qualification areas from last year, and on the right hand side, it's the current year. As you can see, in the last year, there were four qualification areas for PMTE, whereas in the current year, it's now decreased to two qualification areas. However, the biggest component of PMTE and the biggest and their main mandate, which is the maintenance of the immovable asset register, was subject to qualification in the prior period and is still subject to qualification in the current period. The other main area is accrued expenses, where we found that the entity did not recognize all amounts within the definition of a liability in the current period as well as in the prior period. The other big area was the provisions for maintenance, being last year we weren't able to obtain sufficient information. In the current period, there were some audit adjustments passed, which resulted in the qualifications being resolved. On the IDT, as you can see, there is no change. The two areas which resulted in the disclaimed audit outcome in the prior period remain as the two main areas of concern in the current year. Although it's only two areas, these are the two key areas of the IDT's financial statements, and they cut across the whole financial statement. So even though there's two areas, it impacts the whole financial statement, which is the program reserves and liabilities, as well as program receivables, as well as management fees and trade and other receivables, which is basically the whole business of the IDT. For both the areas, the systems and processes were inadequate to provide the information that was required to get the assurance to get assurance. And this one is just a different representation of the previous slide, which is the audit outcomes and the movements for the current year. If we move on to the next slide, which is a representation of the three focus areas separately for the audit. On the left-hand side, we're looking at the audit of financial statements. The green, pink, and red are, as we discussed previously. In addition, in the slide, we're looking at the financial statement submission. And the blue block shows that in the prior period, as well as in the current period, all the auditees, except for PMDE, submitted their financial statements on time. It is a concern for us that it appears to be becoming a bit of the norm for the PMDE to delay the submission of the financial statement. This year was the third time in the last 4 years in which the financial statements were delayed. However, we did not find that there was a marked improvement in the quality of the financial statements or the supporting information supporting the financial statements by delaying the submission of the financial statements. And then three out of the four audits that received unqualified audit outcomes did not require material adjustments to be made subsequent to submission. Only the Agrema Galactica, the new audit, required material adjustments to be made in order to avoid a qualification. On the audit of performance information, as you can see, it's only the CBE which got it right, with all the others still having material findings. On compliance information, once again, it's the CBE as well as the department, which had no material findings with respect to compliance with legislation. Okay. On the next slide, we're looking at the status of internal control. Yes, if we can start with the bottom line on governance, we're looking at five out of the six entities in the portfolio received a green outcome with respect to governance. And what appears is that the governance institutions, which is the internal audit as well as the audit committee, appear to be effective in most instances when it comes to identifying weaknesses and reporting these to management. And they also prepare the proper recommendations and obtain commitments from management as is their purpose. However, it is the lack of implementation of action plans that appears to be hindering the improvement of the department that they execute in the portfolio. If you look at the leadership, only one entity received the green outcome on leadership, and we found that instability at PMDE and IDT at leadership level, and also to a lesser extent at the CIDB, has a severe impact on implementation of action plans. Because we found that when there is constant change in leadership and instability, then there is a lack of accountability or continuity in leadership, which slows implementation. And at financial performance management level, we found that lack of effective financial management disciplines at the PMDE and IDT led to the negative outcomes on the financial statements. And it's very important that these need to be done and implemented consistently throughout the year. At PMDE, as well as at IDT, the majority of the functions are decentralized at regional offices. And while there might be sufficient capacity and the work being done properly at the head office level, if the disciplines are not implemented consistently throughout the year, any work done at the end of the year doesn't adequately address the risk. And the next slide, we're looking at the assurance providers. I think we can almost link this back to the plan, do, check, act cycle. If you look at senior management, which as mentioned was responsible for the do portion of the plan, do, check, act, you can see that this is the worst outcome from all the assurance providers, with 33% IDT providing limited or no assurance at senior management level, and the rest of the auditees only providing some assurance. At the accounting officer level, which is responsible as well for taking actions, we see that at IDT there is limited or no assurance from the accounting officer, with the majority of the departments falling within the provide some assurance. We'll be saying that yes, there was some plans put in place, but the implementation wasn't as required, which resulted in the stagnation. Because you noted that we are mentioning stagnation regardless of the fact that there actually is an improvement at PMDE. And what we're saying is that even though there's an improvement in PMTE, we are very cautious when talking about it as an improvement, because the improvement wasn't as a result of an improvement in internal controls. The improvement came through purely as a result of audit adjustments made after submission of financial statements. So we are cautious to say that this improvement may not be sustainable. Even though there was an improvement in the current year, if the correct internal controls are not properly implemented throughout the year, it could just as easily regress again in the forthcoming year. That's why we're not saying that we think that there is an improvement in the outcome, but there's no improvement with respect to the assurance provided or with respect to the internal control. And you can see on the check part of the cycle, which is the assurance providers, internal audits, internal audit, audit committee, and portfolio committee, there is sufficient level of assurances of assurance provided at most in most instances. Then next, we looked at the management and delivery of key programs in the bigger audits and the entities within the portfolio. What we looked at when we looked at this portfolio is we chose three programs, one each from Public Works, PMTE, and IDT. At the department, we chose the expanded Public Works program as the key program, and it's the main program that's being implemented under the department. In IDT as well as PMTE, we looked at the programs that deal with infrastructure, and this was the key area that we identified as the key areas. In the second column, we're looking at the budgets that were allocated to these programs, so the members get an idea of what the actual value of money is involved in these programs. And as you can look at the budget spent, sufficient budget was spent at DPW for EPWP as well as PMTE for construction project management. However, you'll note that at Public Works, although 99% of the budget was spent, the target was not achieved with respect to creation of work opportunities. The only area that had an issue with respect to spending of the budget was at the IDT, which spent less than 90% of its budget. And you can look at, there's a lot of red and yellow in this graph. There is, with respect to DPW and the EPWP program, with respect to all the programs, there was findings on the material indicators, and none of them were found to be useful or reliable. When it came to the financial statement areas, there was qualification at IDT with respect to infrastructure. On PMTE, on infrastructure, there was material adjustments made, which led to there being no material misstatements, and at EPWP, the accounting for EPWP program was done accurately. Unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We identified irregular as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure on the infrastructure projects, which we'll discuss more in detail as slides go on. I think if we can move on to the next slide, we can look at each of the programs in a bit more detail. The first one we're looking at is the expanded public works program. As you can see, when we look at the key programs, we split it between the three audit areas, which is financial management, compliance, as well as key determined objectives, and we also looked at budget versus spending. When it came to budget versus spending, there's no material findings, as we've mentioned, for EPWP. There's only material findings with respect to key determined objectives. So we're also mentioning that material findings were noted with respect to work opportunities created, and thus we are unable to conclude that the earmark funds were actually used in line with the intended purpose. In addition to doing the work on this program, we also did some value-add work going back to what was the key objectives of the EPWP program when it was set out and what was included in the medium-term strategic framework. And one of the things we identified and we focused on was the training aspect of EPWP, because we hadn't seen a lot of coverage on the training aspect of it. And what we found is that in this phase, and that was a critical component of EPWP when it was first introduced, as EPWP was envisaged to be a part-time skills development and poverty alleviation program which would upskill the participants in order to obtain full-time employment once they almost graduated from the program. So we focused on home-based care programs in two provinces, and we noted that there is no formal training provided to these EPWP beneficiaries. But home-based care, what we noted was, is a highly skilled area. not anybody can do home based care. Training is required. So we found that although formal training is not provided, on-the-job training is provided. However, there's no record made of any of this training provided or of the on-the-job skills, so which would assist the beneficiaries in building a portfolio of evidence and to obtain employment in the similar industry once they graduate from the program. As a result, we found that in most instances, beneficiaries stay indefinitely within the program and they are unable to obtain employment outside in the same field because of the lack of documentation with respect to the training that is required. Then, PMTE, in the time period, we did report on some infrastructure projects and we found it important to do a follow-up on those infrastructure projects that we audited in the prior period. In the prior period, we reported on 3 projects, one in Gauteng, one in Northwest, and one in Western Cape. 2 of them were for correctional facilities, and 1 was a border post. And as you can see, we identified fruitless and wasteful expenditure, possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure at all 3 of the projects. And the current status of these fruitless and wasteful expenditure investigations, we handed them back to the department to say that they should do a full and thorough investigation and quantify any fruitless and wasteful expenditure that needs to be disclosed. Only 1 of the 3 projects, the investigation was finalized before we come to report to you, which is the CMAX internal investigation confirmed that there was indeed fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred on this project. But this was only confirmed after year end. As a result, it's not included in the financial statements as yet. It will be included in the financial statements of the forthcoming year. The other 2 projects indicated to us that the investigation has commenced and we confirmed that. However, it was not yet completed as of the time of this report. Then, looking at the rest of the infrastructure projects, I won't go through each of the infrastructure projects because you will notice when you read them, there's a lot of findings that cut across each infrastructure project. We looked at 7 projects implemented across PMTE as well as IBT. The project that we looked at across 6 provinces and for 4 different client departments. I'm mentioning this just so you know that it is issues that are widespread. Although it should be noted that these are specifically selected projects, so it wasn't a random selection. We did know that there were possible risk areas and these were bigger projects. But we did notice on these 7 key projects that there were major issues on all areas. There were major issues, I think only 1 out of the 7 projects was completed within the initial budget. None of the projects were completed within the initial planned target date. And in numerous instances, there were possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure and also non-compliance with key legislation identified. The non-compliance with key legislation was mainly with respect to project management or with respect to approval of variation orders where the threshold required approval by National Treasury, and this was not obtained. On 3-7 objectives, as the majority of these projects were still in progress, at year end they were not measured for predetermined objectives. As a result, there were no material findings there. But as I mentioned, none of them met targets, so they would be reported as not achieved. I think if we can skip forward to the next focus area, which is financial health and financial management. On financial health, we considered indicators on the financial statements and we identified that on the PMTE and IDT there is significant unfavorable conditions with respect to financial health. For IDT, it is indicated as a significant unfavorable condition purely because of our disclaimed audit outcomes, which means that we are unable to make any claims with respect to the financial health of the institution. However, at PMTE, we did know that there is significant issues with respect to there being a net current liability position, which means that the current liabilities exceed the current assets, and there is a significant bank overdraft of approximately 2 billion rand as of 31 March 2018. And the overdraft has been increasing every year for the past 4 years, which is approximately 400 million rand. It's now sitting at 2 billion rand. And we noted that a key driver on this issue was that the only customers or of the PMT are other client departments, and as they feel the same, they take longer and longer to pay the PMTE. However, the lack of financial management discipline also provides the client departments with the opportunity to delay payments as they hit issues with respect to billing, etc. Yes. On the next slide, looking at the unauthorized, irregular, as well as fruitless wasteful expenditure over the 5 years. And we noticed on irregular expenditure, which was very big starting the 5 year cycle, when the PMTE went through their process of identifying irregular expenditure for previous years, there has been decrease over each of the next 4 years. However, the amount of 210 million is still a significant amount. It looks small when compared to 6.4 billion, however, it is still a significant amount. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure has increased in the current period, mainly because of the 41 million rand incurred by the IDT. But as indicated, there is significant fruitless and wasteful expenditure under investigation at the PMTE in excess of 100 million rand. Unauthorized expenditure was incurred by the department in the erection of bus schools in the previous year, and no unauthorized expenditure has been reported for the last 3 years. Okay. Looking a bit more at the irregular expenditure at SCM on the next slide, 100% of the irregular expenditure was as a result of non-compliance with SCM prescripts. The key amount on this slide is the 69% of the irregular expenditure, which is 125 million rand in the current year, which relates to payments made on contracts awarded in previous year. And this shows that what happens is, on multi-year contracts, if the investigation into the irregular is not adequately and timely completed, then all expenditure on this project going into the future will continue to be irregular, unless the investigation is finalized and the contract condoned. So because the investigations are taking long to finalize, the irregular expenditure continues to be incurred. I think the positive note is that only 5% of the irregular expenditure is actually non-compliance identified in the current year. On the next slide, we're looking at the most common findings with respect to SEM. And here we list the top six that we identified, with the main culprit being that competitive bids are not invited. This is for contracts above the threshold requiring competitive bidding. Deviation process was followed, and we found that the reasons for deviating were not reasonable or justifiable. And there's also issues with respect to tax affairs, contract management, and declaration of interest not submitted or not declared at more than one of the entities. Then we go to fraud and consequence management. We'll be looking at allegations of financial misconduct or possible fraud. We found that at PMTE there were allegations that were received but were not timely investigated. But we found that at IDT, the key issue was that investigations were done and finalized and recommendations were made, but the recommendations from previous years were not yet implemented, which is the key issue. And as you mentioned, the most common instance is that investigations are taking longer than 3 months. We know that in some instances the investigations are quite complex, but they are in general taking very long to complete. Okay. And on the next slide, looking at supply chain management findings reported to management for investigation, this is where we do some high level tests and identify some risk areas which we report to management as key areas for investigation. The areas we look at is the two main ones where suppliers submitted false declaration of interest or employees who failed to disclose interest in suppliers. In the current year, we identified 12 instances of suppliers that submitted false declaration of interest, and we reported to management to investigate because this is an indicator that they might if they may report the division of interest, it's a risk that there could be some irregularity in this award. As well as six instances where employees failed to disclose interest in supplier. This doesn't necessarily mean that employee was involved in awarding the bid, but just the fact that the employee did not disclose is a risk that needs to be investigated. On the right-hand side, we're looking at the same risks and the follow-up of whether the previous year's findings were actually reported to investigation, were reported for investigation by the client. And we found that out of the suppliers submitting for the declaration of interest, two had investigated, and two entities had investigated, and two entities had not investigated. And similarly for employees failing to disclose interest in supplier, similar, two had investigated and one entity had not investigated. Then finally, we're coming to the key root causes of the audit outcomes, and on all the audits that had findings, which means all the audits in the portfolio except for the CBE, the main root cause was that inadequate response to improving key controls and addressing risk areas. Once again, if you go back to our plan do check act cycle, this is talking specifically to the do part of the cycle, which means that there is plan put in place to address findings, but these are not being implemented. We don't want to say that they are taking long to implement, because we have been reporting that for many years. We are not saying that they are not implementing it. Slow response, yes. We're not saying that it's a slow response. Yes. Previously we said it's a slow response, but now we're saying no response. Okay. Then in addition to that, we're looking at the act part of the plan we check act license, which is inadequate consequences for poor performance and transmission. What we're saying is that isn't sufficient consequence management taking place? And as well as as long as officials know that there will not be consequences for their actions, there is no inclination from these officials to change the behavior. So this was found at 60%, and as you can see, it's a PMEA and IDP, which is the two worst outcomes in the portfolio. As well as instability or vacancy in key positions, once again, this links back to inadequate response. As we mentioned when we discussed internal controls, the instability leads to a lack of continuity and a lack of accountability for the action plan. Next, we're looking at the status of commitments. We didn't obtain any new commitments in the current year because we're still checking the commitments that we received from senior management and the executive authority in the prior year. Yes. As you can see, that because those commitments received previously are still relevant and none of them have been fully implemented as yet. As you can see, the majority of the commitments are sitting in the red space of not yet implemented, with only two being that ensuring adequate human resources appointed at PMTE, as well as the organizational development process at IET. Those are currently in progress, and due to the fact that they are multi-year programs, we think that they are in progress. However, the rest of them have not yet been implemented. Okay. Of particular concern for us was the PMTE and the shortcomings in the leasing environment. Here we noted that there has been adequate accounting entries passed to account for the shortcomings in the leasing environment. However, it's still a major concern for us that the amounts that are being paid on leases are incorrect. This has been reported to management for the past 4 years, that amounts paid on leases are not those that are required to be paid as per the lease agreement. Management has gone through the process of going through every lease agreement and confirming the correct amount to be paid. However, we found in numerous instances the amounts paid are more than what is required on the lease agreement, with in the current year approximately 100 million rand being overpaid on leases. 100 million, yeah, for the current year. Obviously, this in some instances may be offset with some underpayments made to the same suppliers. However, our major concern is on the overpayments. There is a process being followed to recover some money that were overpaid in the prior year. We have to note that in the current year, approximately 30 million rand has been recovered of overpayments made in the prior year. But our concern is that even as the process of recovering previous money has commenced, going forward and the bleeding has not stopped. The incorrect payments continue to be made even though the accounting has appeared to be done correctly and management is aware of the incorrect payments being made. Yes. Finally, we are looking at the status of records review. Just as a refresher, the purpose of the status of records review, this was developed in order to give the entities and the department early warnings of possible weaknesses in the internal controls of the departments and entities which may lead to negative audit outcomes. So we look at certain key areas within each of the entities on a quarterly basis and discuss these with management as well as the accounting officer and if possible even with the executive authority. This has been implemented within the portfolio at DPW, PMDE and IDT as the biggest entities. And the methods that are included on this slide are those areas that were discussed with management on a quarterly basis during the status of records review process. However, lack of implementation of our recommendations during this process led to these matters still being reported as weaknesses or as negative outcomes in the audit process. Yes. And finally, we have a graphic here of what we call the corruption formula. We'll be looking at monopoly plus discretion, less accountability equals corruption. And what we're saying is that we can't tackle corruption on its own, but we need to break it up and see what we can control and what we can't control as the public sector. And there's some things that are not controllable, for example, monopoly, where the public sector will always have monopoly on certain services, and therefore that can't be managed. What's the easiest thing to manage is accountability, which we would like to do in terms of the plan, do, check, act cycle. And in terms of a formula, an increase in accountability will lead to a decrease in the possibility of corruption. In addition, to a lesser extent, discretion, if we follow the constitutional guidance of transparency, the more transparency, the less discretion there is, and it will, as we decrease that, it will also decrease the likelihood of corruption. But where the accountability is not performing as it's required to, it creates a fertile ground for corruption to take place. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Madara. I take it you are speaking on behalf of the team, but you are supported by a strong delegation of women. In case there's one who wants to add one point or two, you are allowed. If there's any point you want to add,
yes, Chair, I think from my side, I am responsible for the audit of the IDT. I think that has covered most of the issues. I think one thing that's perhaps pertinent to highlight is that the regular expenditure that we see in here is not even the regular expenditure that's incurred on contract, because as you know, IDT is an implementing agent. So in addition to what you're seeing on the slide, there's actually an additional approximately 86 million rand that we identified on the project, which is quite detrimental to the client department, who then has to disclose those figures in their financial statements. I think from the IDT side, similar to PMCE, unfortunately, they're facing a fourth consecutive complaint audit opinion. So obviously also a lot to be done there in order to turn the ship around. The leadership instability at IDT has had quite a detrimental impact in the past year on all levels, and I think it added to that the organisation development process which was ongoing, which created quite a low staff morale on top of the fact that there was leadership instability. But I think for the most part, the critical matters have been covered in the slide. Thank you. And unfortunately.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we have more strong ladies. The portfolio committee encourages that ladies must be strong.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I must commend the team. I think they've lifted the salient points. There's nothing further for me to add except that they really emphasized how they have been lapses in that accountability cycle. And they further elevated the root causes, so they say that it's gone from an inadequate response to really a no response. In the fourth year being the last year of the third administration, our messages continue to be amplified, which is that the administration know what it is that ought to be done, but are not getting to the things that matter. And the other matter is that often we are asked as the Office of the Auditor General, where are we? We've used the status of records, previously the key control, to elevate the matter, to engage continuously so that they're aware of what it is that needs to be put in place, and we're still not seeing the required traction. So we remain concerned about the lack of leadership stability there, that is going to be able to attend to the matters at hand. But I think someone's commenting to convey the point in very salient but very critical insights that they've brought to the table. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alberto. Gerardo, anything from your side? You are covered. So, Manalera. Thank you very much. Honored members, the Auditor General's Office is here to empower us further so that by the time we meet the department, the entities, we are more sharpened. We also have opportunity to ask some clarity, seeking questions to them if we have anything that is not clear, so that when we go to the entities and the department, we are clear. Can I then give the opportunity to one of the members to do any questions, any clarification questions? Honorable Reza will be the first. Let's move. Honorable Reza will be the first. Then I'll identify Honorable Marcela will follow. I will identify others as they come. Honorable Reza, somebody must volunteer to move the mic.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, as always, to the Auditor General for a comprehensive report which may ruin our day, but at least we have the facts in front of us. I have a number of questions for follow-up. So I'm going to start, I'm going to try and limit it, Chair, thank you. I'm going to start on slide 13. Qualification areas, PMTE. I note that incorrect use of source data in determining value of assets is consistent from year to year. And under this point, last year you indicated that the entity was using an Excel spreadsheet to manage the asset register. We've been hounding them on this point subsequently and haven't really got comfort as a committee one way or the other if they've changed that, adequately changed address that. They're in progress, they keep telling us that they're finished, but I'd like to hear from the AG. Has the migration onto their new software platform happened, or are we still relying on Excel? And because of the incorrect use of source data, perhaps you can just give us a little bit more of a picture on there. If I can then ask you to look to page 17. You mentioned that the decentralized model seems to be negatively impacting the implementation of governments throughout the system. If you can just clarify or perhaps expand a little bit about that decentralized model, if there is potential to centralize it rather, and if the AG has any recommendations in that regard about centralizing control. Let's look then to slide 18, and I'd like you to please expand a little bit what you mean by assurance provided. I need to explain that. I noticed that you indicating that there wasn't much assurance provided by senior management. If you could just explain what you mean by that exactly. Assurance that they can do their job, or assurances that they're going to implement your findings. You also mentioned on the slide that improvement only came after the audit process had taken place, certainly within PMGE. And I'd just like to hear, you know, is that an indicator that you do not have any confidence in the accounting officer and of the PMGE? If you can maybe just tell us that's what you're leading to on that slide. Then let's look at slide 21, please. Okay, so this one related to the material findings on the EPWP. My initial question was, is the problem with the target or the performance? I think you explained that reasonably adequately with the discussion on the with the example on home-based care. Just to say that, you know, just basic record keeping. So actually, don't even worry with that question. I think you answered it with your explanation. Right, slide 22. I do have last year's report in front of me as well that you gave us, and I know that you've done a fair amount of copy and paste, but the fact is I see that these issues came out of last year. I only picked it up afterwards, so I'm going to ignore that one and that question as well. Let's move across to slide 33, please. The question I asked on slide 33 was specifically relating to the false declarations and the uncompetitive procurement processes. And my question was, are there any consequences? You answered that on slide 35. With a negative answer, unfortunately. And then slide 37, I just wanted to point out, Chair, the root causes of the issues, the inadequate consequences, etc. This points to just a simple don't care attitude from the department and the entity. I don't think that there's not really much more needed on that. Last question, Chair. Slide 39. Under PMTE, the second bullet point says the entity incorrectly utilizes the source data in determining the value of renewable assets, especially with regards to extent. Can you explain what you mean there by extent? Financial extent, geographical extent, area, etc. Can you just tell me exactly what you mean by that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matela.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My first question would be on slide number 21, where it talks about the training of the beneficiary for EPWP. And it indicates that there were some budgetary constraints that the people are not trained or the beneficiaries were not trained. I just wanted to check as to whether there was no any money returned in that particular year if there was budgetary constraints. Secondly, if you also look at slide number 23, I just want clarity there, where it talks about budget versus spending. The initial project budget, for example, is not only displayed to other pages. 191 million, revised one, and the actual expenditure. Is it a particular project or is the whole thing for the whole year, which amounted to this amount? Those are my two questions.
Thank you very much. Those were the hands that are available. I take it. There are no hands so far. who will then hand over to the AG to clarify. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jose. Thank you, members, for the questions. Starting off with some responses. On PMTE, the qualification area, the question was, what is the progress with respect to the immovable asset register being on the Excel spreadsheet? The short answer is, yes, it's still on the Excel spreadsheet when we receive the audit. I think the slightly longer answer would be that, according to management, certain functions are done on the system. However, when it's exported for our use, the final version that we receive, or the final version that is corrected for our purposes, is done in Excel, and that is a key root cause when it comes to why the issue still remains. It's practically impossible for them to maintain it, so they require a lot of integrity on Excel, and that results in issues. Yes. On the next question, with respect to internal control, you asked on the issue of decentralization. In our view, well, I can speak mainly for PMTE. For PMTE, decentralization is required. We don't think that the answer would be to centralize a lot of functions. Decentralization is required because it is required that officials are closer to where projects are actually implemented to better oversee the projects and account for them. However, we found that each regional office is not always adequately resourced in terms of skills, especially. They might have sufficient people, but in terms of skills, the skill levels vary greatly between what is at the head office and what is at the regional offices. And because the regional offices provide the input, which is ultimately used to produce a financial statement, if those inputs are captured incorrectly because people do not understand or do not do things properly for whatever other reason, then you're never going to get the right answer once it's combined and consolidated. Yes, when it comes to assurance provided, this, we look at the level of assurance that we require in terms of giving a clean audit outcome and how each level contributes to giving us that assurance that we require. So when we're saying that senior management is not providing us with the assurance that we require, that's where we're coming from, to say that senior management, this is the function that we expected that should be done in terms of best practice, and we measured senior management against those benchmarks, and then we see that they are categorized as limited or no assurance or providing only some assurance. And with respect to the question of PMTE improvement happening only after the audit process commenced, what we say is this: we are linking this back to the root cause and saying that the instability that was at PMTE, we found that there was major changes within the year with respect to the head of PMTE was changed, the head of finance was changed, a lot of other departmental heads were either new appointments, new acting positions, or reshuffled within portfolios more than one time in some instances within the year, as well as the accounting officer also changing. It led to significant instability, and also then led to the action plans not being implemented properly. So it's not a single person that we are singling out, but senior management and leadership as a whole. Okay. On EPWP, the question was whether the main issue was with respect to the target or the achievement. And we have issues with respect to the target, but that is mainly at provincial levels, where provincial levels there is no consistency between what each province has as their target. Some provinces, because it's important for national level, because national is actually the reporting on a consolidated work opportunity created, but each province is reporting inconsistently with respect to work opportunities created. Some provinces reporting on all work opportunities created within the province, others are only reporting on work opportunities created by public works within that province. Yeah. And the root cause of this is that because it hasn't been adopted as a customized indicator, there is no requirement for each province to report consistently. And that's why we recommended repeatedly that once it's a customized indicator,
then it will assist in achieving consistency. Because what we found is even those that have a consistent indicator are still measuring it differently because there is a lot of room for interpretation of what certain words mean within the target. So that's the problem with respect to the target. But our main finding for the year for National Department was on achievement, and we found that there was a lot of under-reporting of achievement, but where there was reporting, this reporting was not always supported by the required documentation. That's why we say that we are unable to give assurance that the money is actually reaching the intended beneficiaries. Okay. I think the issue of positive relations, as the Honourable mentioned, Honourable Member mentioned, it was already addressed in the next slide. And extent. The meaning of extent with respect to immovable asset register is that this is the square meterage extent. How it's measured is by using GIS maps. So we request the actual GIS maps and compare it to what is recorded for that same property on the asset register. And we find that the GIS map says one extent of the land parcel, where the immovable asset register has a different extent. And it's a huge concern because it's not as if we are using a different GIS. We are using the same GIS that the department has, and we actually request those GIS maps from the department. They provide it to us, but it's not consistent with what they have captured on the immovable asset register.
What is GIS?
Geographic
information.
GIS. IS, it's a software used to measure. Yeah. It has a lot of functions. I'm not sure all of them. But the function we use is that we use it to measure extents using satellite technology.
Modeling.
Sorry? Okay, can you move on?
Yes.
Then the next question was with respect to the expanded public works program and the training of the program. We mentioned budget constraints. As indicated, 99% of the budget was utilized. And what's important to note is that the training was not included as a target. It was removed in this phase. Because of budgetary constraints, it wasn't included and therefore it's not even measured.
Mm.
Yeah. But what we're saying is that regardless of the budgetary constraints, there is training, even though it's not formal, there is informal training actually happening.
Mm.
But because it's not being documented, the beneficiaries are not receiving the benefit of that training. Well, they receive the benefit as long as they are within the program, but they are unable to leave the program and get full-time employment, which is actually what the proper intention of the program was, that they can leave the program and get full-time employment, but that's not happening. And, sorry, if I can give a quick explanation, there was a quick explanation on the programs. On slide 23, if we can just look at that one in detail, and then I suppose we can use that explanation to look at the rest of the slides. On slide 23, we're looking at specifically one project, which is the Tanin Correctional Facility in Limpopo. On the budget versus spending, what we're looking at here is that when the project commenced, the project was budgeted to cost 191 million rand. The revised project budget is still the budget amount after taking into account variation on this. And this shows that if you look at every single one of them, you'll see that the initial budget and the revised budget, which points to a root cause of there being inadequate planning at the initial stage, which results in variation orders always being required. So as you can see, the initial project budget was 191 million, and then that was revised to the current budget, which is 229 million. And even though this project is not yet complete, the actual expenditure to date is 225 million rand. So that means that there's only 4 million rand left to complete the budget, and chances are that budget will be exhausted before the project is complete.
Mm.
And we're looking, sorry?
Yes.
No. Yes. And then the next portion of that one, we're looking at time. The project was started on 13 January 2010 with an estimated period of 3 years, and now it's 9 years later and the project is not yet complete. So we see that a lot of projects start with an intended finish date of a short period of 2 years or 3 years, but the project actually takes 7 to 10 years to complete.
And obviously, as we extend the time, it gets more and more expensive every year to complete the project. Okay, then we're looking at the financial management aspect. When we look at the work, we find that in a lot of instances, possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure is incurred. That's where we find that money was paid, but no value was received. In some instances, there is one contractor on site who is then removed for poor performance, and a new contractor is appointed. And we find that the scope of work for the new contractor overlaps with what was already certified and done by the first contractor. So when we compare the two, and we say that now you've paid contractor number two for installing X, but this was already paid to contractor one. So that means that contractor one obviously did not do installation of item X. So therefore that amount paid to contractor one is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But because we're working with limited information and auditors, we pass it back to management to say do a proper and full investigation of the entire project and see how much of it is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we say it's a financial management issue as well, because if we pay an amount as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, this should not be included as part of the value of the asset. That means the value of the asset is overstated. Because now we've only got an actual asset worth so much, but we've double paid for some parts of it, meaning that there's overstatement of the asset. On compliance, on this project we had significant deficiencies noted regarding contract management. But as I noted, the other major issue we identified on some other contracts was variation orders. When we mentioned the variation orders, once they go over a certain threshold, we have to get national surgery to approve it. And in a lot of instances, that national surgery approval is not obtained prior to the variation order being made. When it came to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we found that the key root cause was the inadequate planning, but also inadequate oversight by the department. We're finding that the project managers are passing on too much of responsibility to the third-party consultants and not following up and not being on site regularly to actually confirm that the work that is being certified was actually performed, which resulted in that work being done twice. And also it was noted that there was a lot of repetition from last year to this year. I think that shows also that it's also different projects. The wording is similar, but that's because it's exactly the same issue that we reported on last year is occurring in the same year. I mean, it's occurring again this year. And therefore, it appears that it's a copy and paste.
It is for the environment.
Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the colleagues of the response to some issues that I encourage.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think Brian has really dealt with the bulk of it. I think to add on to what he said, from an IDT perspective, probably centralization also would not be the answer because of the decentralized nature of the operations. There's a lot happening on provincial and regional level. However, in addition to the fact that what he's mentioned with regards to the documentation not being collated and so forth, I think specifically at the IDT, one needs to understand that even in terms of an audit outcome, a finance department cannot oversight a current audit outcome. And I think what we find sometimes is that, you know what, people do not always realize the collective effort that it takes. For example, you know, the built environment specialist on the ground handing in the invoices, assignments, and so forth. So in addition to that function of decentralization where you have to beef up the finance department, there needs to be that realization that really takes an effort from everybody to make sure that everything can be properly accounted for. And then with regards to the assurance, I think it's important to note that when financial statements are submitted for auditing, there's actually a signature there that comes with, we actually give you our assurance that what we're giving to you is fairly presented. And I think that is what is lacking, very lacking in the three instances. And probably also if you look at that slide that you said, the assurance, you'll know that it's actually a combined assessment of the financial compliance and performance information assurance that was provided or the lack thereof. Then I think from an IDT perspective, the only thing that I could probably add is if you have a look at slide number 20, despite of having discuss the tremendous overspending on project level. I mean, if you look at the number of projects that between IDT and PMC they implement, and you look at the nature of the overspending, and you see on slide 20 that on an overall level there wasn't overspending, it just shows the detrimental impact that it's having on future infrastructure development as well as maintenance of projects. Because clearly this money is now detracting from what should have been new initiatives. So I think from my side that is basically what I wanted to add on top of that excellent diverse answers. Thank you.
Thank you, Devon. Honorable Ryder.
Thank you, Chair. All that running forward, just a brief follow-up question. In terms of your comments from slides 17 and 18, I'd just like to ask, has the Auditor General seconded or considered seconding some specialists to assist the department and entities in the goal of improving the audit outcome?
You can answer.
No, I wanted to say clearly that's in contradiction with our independent function, but we have been bringing
many
officials from the public sector. I think if you look from a broad overview perspective, a lot of the Auditor General officials graduate from our organization and come towards government. There has been a marked increase in the past couple of years, perhaps not necessarily not the PMCE and DIP and IDC. But yeah, I think that's a complete no-no in terms of the funding from an auditing perspective.
Thank you, Ilza. Just to add to that, it would hamper our independence in terms of the comment. But as Ilza already said, in a training institution, we find that a lot of our senior management and those who finish articles find their way into public sector. I think that's our contribution to the skills that are there. But the environment and the way it's characterized is certainly not from a lack of skills on their side and them understanding what they need to do. It's a lack of what we said earlier on when it comes to skill response. It's a disregard for doing the right thing because what needs to be done is known. The action, so I even envisage a situation where seconding the people, that the environment is characterized so much that they would find themselves responding to the tide that prevails in that environment. Even when we looked at, I think, Honourable Member, you asked about the combined assurance. Across all levels, everybody knows what it is that needs to be done. And the first level of assurance being the senior management, when we also talk about the accountability cycle, they need to plan, they need to implement the controls, and they need to be like oversight about the basics that are put in place. And that's not being done, and I think purely not because they don't know what to do, but there's no consequences for not doing anything. And if we look at the second level of assurance, although they agree, their effectiveness and their effective level is hampered by the basics being done. So when the members leave us and they join, we cannot discourage them, but seconding our employees, they would not be the idea.
Thank you very much. Maybe if I can add, okay, Mama must be allowed you to go ahead and give us this there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. On the same breath, I was open for these officials to come and be briefed on issues if ever they find that there's some problems, they don't know how to account for certain things and so on. Are your doors open? Is it possible for you maybe to even organize to sort of workshop them in some way, not necessarily one particular entity, but all of them? Is it possible to do that so that we are sure that these people that really know what they're supposed to do? Thank you.
So let me also thank the Auditor General for always giving us a precise state of what's happening in our department. I think it was last year and the year before that I put the question to the Auditor General, and then I was told it should not have an effect on audit outcomes. But I still maintain if there's too much movement at the top of any organization, even in the household, it will affect down to the junior levels. Do you agree with me in that regard? And I think, Chair, as a portfolio committee, we should really put our stamp down in terms of the executive authority, because the Constitution gives us the rights to have oversight over the executive authority. And, you know, it's pathetic that we sit here every year and we get to the same thing as the Auditor General. Every year the same thing. Every year the same thing. I think for 2 years or 3 years, CBD was the only light in this whole Department of Public Works. So at the end of the day, when there's no stability on top, it will definitely filter down. Although there is so much that's been done to, how can I say, for lack of, to empower those juniors that's down there. But the instructions from the executive authority, because there's always movement, there's no stability, that will definitely have an impact in that regard. So I think that we as a portfolio committee should really, you know, I would have loved when we get to a situation where we get the AG and the minister, deputy minister, and the executive of the department in one room, and we look each other in the face and say, guys, this is not how we can service South Africa. This is really not. What is your response to this, of what the Auditor General has said? Please give us your response, like SCOPA does. If we can get that, I think then they will probably say, no, but the AG is wrong. No, that one is wrong, or that one is wrong. But I think the AG's department, or the office of the AG, has done a wonderful job, sir. And I can see the woman of the power to men in that department, so yeah, it is a good job that they've done. But I think the onus is still on us as to really clamp down on this department, sir. And with your leadership, I think we can do that.
Thank you very much. Remember, Honorable Adam, that the AG's work is to just to make us see what they see, but they can't direct to a meeting to be referenced. They have done it enough, so it's up to us then to call the minister, to call the senior management, and do whatever we want to. Allow them to see the results of their work from another angle. So if they are present, sometimes it should be like they are forcing us to fight. But the most important thing for us to note is that some of these shortcomings are repeated. So the Auditor General would have warned everybody about those shortcomings.
They continue.
Now, it's really up to us to change our approach. I think we'll talk about it when the Auditor General is here. But maybe one point I want to add, one or two points. There was an indication about the SA adjustment to which was made to make a board qualification. If that can be clarified more clarity on that adjustment. The other point is made about the client department that in fact contributing to the overdraft that the PMT is finding itself in, because
because the other client department are not paying the PMT. So the results now, PMT found itself in the big overdrafts because of those departments that are not also helping. If there's more clarity into such department that may not the client department that may be not really assisting, so that we know how it happened that PMT is in this situation, because the fingers is on the client department that are not also assisting. So it is possible to know which are those. Can we allow the AG to come back?
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just start with one comment to say, in our department, the women do not overpower the men, they empower the men. just the fact that there was a comment made, keep our doors open to the department, I think the answer to that is that whole implementation of the status of records review is our way of opening our doors for the department to say that here's what we know. In fact, we started the process immediately after concluding the audit. So we conclude the audit, and then within the month, we have the initial engagements to say that these were the key areas that led to negative outcomes, and this is your key, these are the key recommendations. Because what happens is, at PMT and IDT, there are so many issues that cut across so many areas that management needs to prioritize, and we assist them by saying that key recommendations to adjust audit outcomes, and this is what is then used by management to create their own audit action plan. And that's what we check them on a quarterly basis, because we need to give them some time and some space to actually implement. So on a quarterly basis, we come back and see that this is what we said were the key recommendations, and this is what the status is of actually implementing those things. But we have had major challenges, especially at PMTE, with receiving information on an early basis. We would love to give information or really some recommendations on an early morning basis so that we can actually see whether the implementation is happening throughout the year. But what happened at PMTE in the current year was that we kept being told that we are still busy, we give you information. They said February, then it became April, then the beginning of May, then we only received the information at the end of June. So what happened was when we started doing our actual audit, was the first time we were looking at a lot of the information, which meant that it was difficult, it was impossible for us to say that, yes, we have weaknesses, are, go and fix them so we can come and audit you. It was only time for audit. So that's what happened. Mm-hmm. Obviously, our door is open, but we need that buy-in from management as well to say that, here's the information in advance. But, I mean, on the other side, in the going forward, we have had good feedback from management and saying that they do want to start earlier this year. However, we can't see the policy that we have started up in the world. So PMTE was only finalized in the first week of September. And what happens is, every time the audit gets delayed, it delays the whole cycle for the next year as well. Mm. Because we start the audit 1 month later, we finish it 1 month later, and the next year's audit is then shortened by a month. That's our issue.
I remember there is a letter that the Auditor General himself signed in, I think, around August, to the in response to the Audit Committee, where they were expressing to us their concern around the lack of the combined assurance model working effectively. They were referencing to the fact that internal audit effectiveness is hampered. They have contracted out internal audit, and I think they've spent the tune of $46 million. In the work that internal audit does, and they were asking us what extent can we rely more on their work, and our response to the myriad of issues that they raised in that letter was exactly that. We offered and availed ourselves for a workshop. In that workshop, we've asked that management avail themselves, the audit committee avail themselves, the internal audit and the risk, to go and discuss the principles of the combined assurance model, the importance of doing the basics, because it starts with those building blocks of the accountability cycle, the plan, the do, the check, the act cycle. When Beth and Ilza had finished presenting, I made the point that we have seen lapses of the effectiveness of the accountability cycle. You'll see even in the project, when the planning is not working, the rest of the natural conclusion on how it will fail. He has kept emphasizing that the implementation, they will develop plans, but there is no adherence to implementing. There is nobody checking that those plans are being implemented effectively, and because there is limited consequences on those who are not being seen to do the right thing. So certainly we've offered our support to attend, we've availed ourselves. We're still waiting for a management response, and from the audit committee chairperson who sent us this letter to say, I think we need to go back with them to the drawing board, and maybe if we engage in outside the rigor of a normal audit, there might be some of the messages that we are saying hitting home. And without repeating what he has said about the state of the record, we've invested a lot in that initiative coming outside of the audit. It all happened during the audit in pursuance of management and all the efforts wanting to get a good audit outcome. They focus more on the outcome rather than what has prevailed over the years. So we do the status of record to engage outside the attention of the audit process so that they hear us differently in a different space where there's less focus on the audit. And they have not the opportunity to take the advice and the recommendation that we gave them during the status of record. And I think we continue to avail ourselves and collaborate with them. But at one stage, after all the advice, after all the recommendations, after all the insights, they need to go into that which we have advised them of. Short of us giving ourselves, this is not possible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Just to respond on the other matter that was raised, there was a comment made, and I was going to add to the comment on the repeat issue. And it's actually something that we should highlight that as the PMTE, as well as the ID team, none of the issues that we identified here are new issues. Everything was reported on last year and the competition, which is a concern for us as well, that there is nothing new that's coming out. It's all the same things. On a Agrima essay, the audit adjustments, I mean, without wanting to make excuses for them, this was the first time that the entity was formed and reporting for their for themselves. And as such, there was some there was some hiccups on their side, as well as some uncertainty as to what was to be reported by them themselves, as well as what was to be reported by the CSIR, which was where they were a unit before. So we assisted them in that. However, because the process wasn't as smooth as we would have liked from their side, and there was an uncertainty, some of the adjustments had to be made after the audit started. As a result, there was no key adjustments that were made. But we foresee that now that they are up and running, we hope that it will be improved going forward. It wasn't really an internal control issue, it was more a one-off issue because it's an initial financial statement that is prepared for the first time. But I don't have the specific amount here or which area it was, but there were a few areas where there were issues. And then when it comes to the issue of client departments not paying, and how it's impacting the overdraft issue, I think we should also highlight the fact that from PMTE side, even though they are in existence for more than 10 years, they are still almost operating as an interim mechanism, where it was this long word that is as hard to say as it is to implement, that operationalization of PMTE is still not finalized. And the intention of the PMTE and the way that they envisage that they will reduce the overdraft first to reach a point where they charge market-related rates and actually charge client departments for buildings they're occupying. But because the house is not yet fully in order, they are constantly in an environment where they are getting exemptions from national treasury in terms of how they build their client departments, etc. So they're building the client departments not based on what buildings they're occupying, but rather just on what national treasury devolves to the client departments, which results in some clients, some departments actually occupying buildings that they are not paying for or they're not required because they're not required to pay for it. Because TMT does not invoice them because it's sitting there in certain dispensations. I think that's why we say that from TMT side, if they can fix their own house and get fully operationalized, then they can actually assist themselves in driving the overdraft issues to be resolved. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, one of the members. We think we are likely to be now more informed, more clarified. I think the office of the Auditor General has done the effort to equip us so that when we meet the entities and the departments, we can really do what the nation expects us to do to ensure that we make them free where they are compromising the nation. All these big projects that are properly located in various provinces for the benefit of South Africans, when they are now delayed, not by 1 year, a 3 year planned project now end up being 10 year project. As if there were no planners, there were no engineers, there were no stakeholder management. I don't know where was the rattle of the department. It's in the right of the department to ensure that the stakeholders are meeting to plan the collective. Because I think one thing, important point you have also raised is lack of consequences. That people continue doing what they were doing and there's no head that is still rolling or not enough heads rolling. I think these are the points. I also, Honorable Adams, you have also made those points that we should be really strong to a point where we really, because it can't be 4 years saying excuses. Even the thing of changing people in senior positions is a recipe for such situations. So I think it's also up to us to be more stronger. We are the scoper of the department. Scoper is a general scoper for all the departments, but now we are a focus scoper for the department. So we should be doing more than the scoper, because our time and money is based on the department and the entity. In particular, the entity called the PMT, which is a department, called by another name, just to run away from embarrassment. I think these things must not be done forever, because in the end of the day, they are compromising the people of South Africa, because the services that these entities are giving should go to the people of South Africa. We are here to serve the people of South Africa. I think there's one point you made, the Office of the Auditor General, in your concluding slide about the monopoly, that you think the monopoly may not be dealt with, but should be like managed. So remember, we are a developing nation. We are from a situation where 20% was catered for, 20% of population was catered for by the government, and 80% was excluded from any meaningful benefits from the government.
that would then include the monopoly, whether it's public or private, because everything then was only focusing on benefiting the minority, which was 20%. Now, the monopolies that developed all over the years, 300 and so many years, were all focused, whether private or public, were all focused on enhancing or empowering the 20% at the expense of the 80%. Now, today, this day and age, we cannot justify any monopoly. Because, and it in the Freedom Charter, which we adopt as a governing party and everybody else, it says South Africa belongs to all who live in it, black and white. But in essence, so far, South Africa, in terms of the economy, the real benefit, is still belonging to the 20%. And now, the Office of Auditor General, you must not mince your words on these things. Cannot justify monopoly, because monopoly has a history. And also, it has a bad intention of fewer enjoying. When we must say more, even if it's on the public or private. The more participants we have, the better for the nation to be empowered. So there's no room for monopoly. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. The more stakeholder participation is enhanced and trained, the better for our nation. You empowered rich people is not good news for a developing nation. So otherwise, we will be praise singers for this view of our destruction as a nation. So I think look into that light. Monopoly is this the way sometimes some organizations are so strengthened. We don't even want to empower others to grow. Because no, let's allow this one, let's rely on this one. No, let's develop more. Whether it's public sector or private, let's develop more. So let's build more, let's train more. So that at least we share the country. I think your office must also tell us. Don't justify it. It's a way to go. We are a developing nation. The way monopoly is bad news. Where few people eat and others are spectators. We eat crabs. We are told what we are eating. Everything is of an amount. The rupees. It can't be right. Can't be right. So I think we must just be honest. Honest is the best policy. Honest is the best policy. That can't be right. Well, we have said as one of the members that you always, the Office of the Auditor General, standing very firm in giving us where we are wrong. So we appreciate you over the years. You are ensuring that you don't put these things under the table, but you put them on the table. It's up to us then to take it up and impress on the department to do what they are supposed to do what they are paid to do, to stop doing what they are not supposed to be doing. So we really appreciate you. Pass our thanks to the head of your institution. We really appreciate your work. To one of the members, we are suggesting that we don't deal with minutes because we could not get one member from us so that we have a full forum. But it was good for the briefing from AG. The meeting is fine, but for dealing with minutes, we think we needed one member, so the parliament could not give us.
one because we are away. There are many committees that are sitting there. Good news, we moved at 12, who can go and get something at the restaurant. The lunch is prepared there as 12. For tomorrow, the whole day, one of members, let's get those that are not here, who are not in hospital, to be here. They will be meeting the CPE and the CIDD the whole day tomorrow. And the other day, the day after tomorrow, so then Thursday, yes, will be also here the whole day from 9:30 to say 4:00. We'll be meeting ITT and ASREMA South Africa. So we must really be clear what we must do. So honourable members, maybe before I close, I don't know if you received this. The Office of Auditor General requested me that I request you to just jot something on the questionnaire, just to check if they were doing the work the Auditor General is expecting them to do, if they show enthusiasm, show competency. So you have seen there was a person who was speaking, but even other ladies were ensuring that they are not outsmarted. So they were there. So I think let's mark them properly. You are doing the work. I think we are always happy. We are even more happy that you also belong to the future. I see young people all over, you know yourself, so which means you belong to the future. So South Africa belongs to you. So now, if you can do it before as we close, you mark and then we give them back. I therefore want to take this opportunity to thank everybody, the office of the minister, and do impress on you to ensure that tomorrow, besides the entities we're meeting, we would expect the department, the senior leadership of the department. I don't mind if one, let's say the DG is not around for whatever reason, but I expect other senior guys to be around. Because when the entities present, they must be there to listen and they must also answer. Because they also take a responsibility of us, the entities. So they can't go on holiday when entities are presenting here. They must be ready to answer. They're also not junior people. Okay, they are relevant people in department, but those that are called DDG, they are not paid highly for nothing. They must come and answer. CFOs and everybody, those that are, so they must come. So please do indicate to the minister, that's what we are communicating. They must be here. Those that are present will be presenting. When they are done, we'll check the department. Do you have anything to say, department? I'm already telling you what I will tell tomorrow. So your advice, yeah? Honourable members, I think at this stage, thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.